Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, today's show is kind of unique. I decided to show the best of both worlds, you know, going to BJJ and then ending up in mixed martial arts. The reason I brought my first guest on today, I generally have her and her husband on, who are both practitioners out there in San Diego under Gracie, but, you know, I felt it was very prevalent to bring her on in many aspects. You know, I think what she's doing in the sport, well, I should say the art, is tremendous. So without further ado, Professor Jenna Bishop, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always an honor and a pleasure. Hey, this time we get to do our interview without the dream boat, which is kind of awkward and a little bit different, but it'll be fun nonetheless. You know, I honestly never really do much research on people I bring on the show. I generally never write a question down. But the more and more I researched you, the one thing that kept coming to mind is that the reflection of everybody is that you're one of the most important female competitors of this time in the art we know as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. How does that make you feel, Professor, knowing that many are giving you the acclaim that you truly have worked so hard for but truly deserve?
I mean, I don't know that I would say I was one of the most important female competitors, but, I mean, it's, you know, an honor for people to say that about me. I do, like, it's a lot of responsibility, that's for sure, but, you know, the one thing that Jiu-Jitsu has done for me is given me a platform to, you know, influence a lot of young women. It's, you know, like, forced me into a spot of being a role model, and especially being able to be an instructor and teaching children in the women's program. It's really cool that I can have, like, just that impact, you know, on young minds and then other females out there that, you know, I can be a positive influence for them.
Yeah, very well said. You know, I heard a world-class competitor and Tom DeBlas speak today, and I told myself that I was going to ask you this question because, you know, Tom is very profound in a lot of ways, and I like getting different aspects and thoughts from different practitioners. You know, he says he has the same doubts being at the world-class level as he did as being an amateur. Would you say that correlates into the lives of many practitioners, including you, Professor?
Is it the same doubt?
He has the same doubts now in going into the world-class level, you know, same doubts, same fears, going into the world-class competitions as he did in the amateur competitions. Would you say that transitions into you and many other practitioners?
Oh, yeah. I think that it might maybe amplifies it once you get to a professional level, just because, you know, there's a lot more riding on it and there's a lot more pressure if you're competing at a higher level than just the, you know, the undercards and things. Like, coming up, you're just trying to make your way. And then, like, once you get to those, like, you know, the black belt level when you're competing, there's, like, any doubts that are, or fears that you have, like, in competing, I think, kind of, like, come to the forefront. But because I've had so much experience competing, like, you know, all those years up until black belt, I've been a black belt now for 4.5 years, I think that the more experience I get, the easier it gets, and, like, it's easier to, like, quiet those doubts and those fears.
You know, I read this article, and I know you know what article I'm talking about. You know, here I'm looking at a four-time pan champion, a five-time world champion, 2013 champion, and I was kind of taken back by a remark that you made, and I see it being prevalent in the world of mixed martial arts, but I never really looked at it as being a prevalent issue in the art of BJJ, and that's social prejudice and sexism. Do you think that as a woman that it is more profound in the mat setting in the BJJ world than it is in the mixed martial arts world? And what do you feel we need to do to correct that?
I mean, I think it's the same across the board. I think it's just one of those things where it's kind of a cultural thing, too. It's in sports, it's in your everyday life. But, you know, I mean, it's there. But I think that, like, I don't let it affect my, I guess, my outlook on things and the way that I handle my business, the way that I go about my competing. Like, I think that it's just one of those things that I deal with. And, you know, I just keep working hard to make sure that I do whatever I can to push women to, you know, to, like, having more equality. But it's just, I said this earlier, too. It's like me sitting here and complaining about it or saying, you know, like, I could be really negative, but that does me no good. It does the women no good, you know. I think that we just have to continue to work hard, and I think, you know, that's been my philosophy with everything. It's like I can't really, like, change other people's opinions and other people's behaviors. The only thing I can control is myself. So I have to do whatever is necessary for me to achieve my goals, and that's just, you know, hard work and, like, keeping dedicated, supporting other women when I have the opportunity to, and then, you know, doing what I can to help contribute to growing women's jiu-jitsu. And I think that if we continue to do that, then, you know, we're going to, they won't be able to, like, overlook us or, you know, as women. It's like, we're just going to be there. And I think typically in my opinion, things that, I mean, I'm sure I'm biased, but I think the women's matches in jiu-jitsu a lot of times are more exciting than some of the men's matches. So I think if we continue to, like, compete hard, train hard, and do our jobs, that, like, everyone will start to see that. And I think that it's gonna, as the sport grows, like, that will fade. The sexism, the prejudices might fade out a little bit.
You know, I have to agree with you. You know, I've brought on several black belt practitioners on the women's side, and each and every time I get profound interviews. You know, one thing that stuck out for me and made me really admire you was you said, just keep doing what you're doing instead of complaining. And I think that that's a very profound statement, because no matter what in life, you know, life is going to throw many things at you. You're going to get hit from every side with many different, you know, arguments. But for you to say, no matter what it is, just keep going, keep doing what you're doing, what does that mean to Jenna Bishop to overlook all the obstacles and dig down deep in her heart and continuing doing what she loves, the art of, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
I mean, for me, I feel like it's pretty easy just because I love jiu-jitsu. Like, it's my life, you know. It's like what I've built everything around. Like, me and my husband, we both are, you know, competitors. He's involved in everything. So for me, it's just like, it's easy for me just to, like, not worry about anything because it's what I'm so passionate about. I just want to do jiu-jitsu every day. And so I don't really care what anybody says or does, like, outside of that. Like you said, I can only control my actions and my opinions. So it's easy for me to just go about my business every day, like, and it's less stress on my life if I'm not worried about anybody else, but just, like, doing, like, my job.
Well, you know, I love having you and your husband on the show, and because you guys are very outspoken. You know, you the more shy than Tyler. Of course, he's the.
Yeah.
Like we talked about earlier, he's the Mississippi Dreamboat. You can't expect nothing less than that from the rock star of BJJ. But
yeah.
There is something that you two do come together on, and that's the ministry that you guys have out there, the ministry about the art of BJJ. What does that ministry truly mean to Tyler and Jenna Bishop? And what are the goals in furthering this ministry for other practitioners in the sport of BJJ?
I mean, I think for us, we want to spread jiu-jitsu to good people. We want to teach, and like, we love jiu-jitsu. It's something we're passionate about. I think that for us, it's a great outlet for us as a couple. Like, it's something we share together. We're very close, and you know a lot of people, like, in couples, like, oh, I need a break from my husband or whatever, and I'm like, if Tyler doesn't show up to practice one day because he has a meeting at work, or I'm like, we don't get to, like, train together, it's like disappointing to me. Like, for both of us, like, we like to spend our time together, and jiu-jitsu gives us that opportunity to do that, and it's something that we can share with other people, and I think it strengthens our relationship as just like in our marriage. And then we'd love to, you know, spread it, like I said, to good people. Like, we want to be able to teach jiu-jitsu, but to and spread the word in the art, like, as much as we can.
Yeah, and I think you two are doing a tremendous job at it. You know, one question that I've always told myself, that if I ever had you on the show alone, you know, because I know what Tyler's answer would be, but, you know, that's why I like doing, you know, having you separate on the show this time, you know, because I've had legends of the sport of mixed martial arts on. I've even had legends of the BJJ world, but one question I've never asked anybody in the art of BJJ is, what does it truly mean to you once you put that gi on? What does it do for the soul, the heart, the drive of Professor Jenna Bishop?
When I'm in my gi, I'm happy. I feel like I'm doing what I was meant to do. Like, I've been dealing with a few injuries here lately, and Tyler and my Professor Hedges, they've been like, you need to rest your body, you need to rest your body, like, whatever. But it's so hard for me to, like, take time away from jiu-jitsu, because even if I'm injured, I'm going to be on the mats, and I'm going to be sitting there, like, absorbing. I put my gi on, and I watch or do whatever I can that, you know, to keep myself healthy. And it's hard for me to, like, take a step back from it, because I feel like I'm in my element. I feel happy when I'm doing jiu-jitsu. I feel like I know my purpose.
It tells you truly who you are. You know, when you sit back and you look, you've got Horla Gracie, you got J.W. Wright, you got your husband Tyler Bishop, and many, many more. You know, would you say that having that advantage as a practitioner has left more of a profound mark on you moving forward in the art of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, as a, you know, going into worlds, going into pans, being able to have somebody to ask those questions that many don't have the answers to? You have that capability. You have people who have been there before. You have people that have all the knowledge. How much pressure does it take off you having that ability to have that much knowledge?
I think it's funny, because I talk about this a lot. Like, we talk about having coaches in your corner, and really, like, especially when you went to the black belt level, there's not much that your coach, like, does for you, like, that can change the outcome of your match, like, whatever. But having those people, like JW and Tyler and my coach here in San Diego, Hedges, like, just having them there, like, just eases my mind. Like, I know, like, I've prepared. I've surrounded myself with the right people and done everything I can to put myself in a position to succeed every tournament. And I tell this to people all the time. Like, I feel so blessed to have the team behind me that I do, and the training partners. And, you know, because of JW, I've been able to, you know, train with a lot of really good people, and he's exposed me and given me opportunities to, like, be around these very, like, high-level, like, coaches and mentors, and it's one of those things. It's like, I could have, if I had not met Jay, you know, and we went to some other Jiu-Jitsu academy and started our journey in a different place, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that could change. I see other people, you know, in the same city that train at different schools, and I think because of the school that I picked, like, I'm very blessed because it gave me the opportunity to be at the level that I'm at today. And that's, like, I think that's what probably the best thing about it is just I have good people behind me, and I know that I have good jiu-jitsu, like, solid fundamentals. And especially coming out of, you know, Missouri, where there's not a lot of, like, high-level jiu-jitsu, like, there wasn't at the beginning, you know. I think I'm blessed to have just – we were at the right school, the right people, and everything kind of fell into place. And I just – I'm always grateful that I have the right people in my corner.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. You know, when – because I've been shooting, you know, aspects of all genres of the sport for many years, and I'm out here in the Midwest still. You guys left me out here. No, I'm joking. But, you know – it's true. You watch, you go back just 4 or 5 years, and there really wasn't a predominant base of great BJJ practitioners in the Midwest. I mean, you look at St. Louis was pretty much the hotbed, but now you look at things and you've got, you know, St. Louis is still continuing to grow with JW, but then you got breakoffs down here with David Lopez, and you got Rafael mm-hmm. Lovato, and you got Jared Dopp, and the list is continuing to grow. So the art of BJJ is taking on a tremendous aspect in the Midwest. You know, I'll admit to you, just like I did Tyler, you know, when I first initially got pulled into shooting BJJ, like I told you before we went live, I honestly thought it was the most boring sport to ever shoot. And then I met your husband, and
yeah.
it just kind of enthralled me. And then later on that night, I was standing in the room before Respect started, and here I'm standing in the same room with Rafael Lovato, Jared Dopp, Ezra Lennon, JW, and I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I got this overwhelming just feeling that I was standing in a room with greatness. And
mm-hmm.
from that point on, you know, I looked at the art of BJJ a little bit different. You know, I started shooting more seminars. I started getting pulled in more. And just recently, the guy that gave you your black belt, I got my first role with JW. And I'll tell
mm-hmm.
you what, that day will forever be in my heart as one of the greatest memories. You know, one thing I love about JW Wright is he could be, let's say there was a titanium belt, I'm being pathetic here, but let's just say there was a titanium belt and it was the highest belt she could be, he would still maintain the same humility he did as a white belt, no matter where he was at. The love and the equality that he shares with everybody is truly profound. What type of statement, I know you made a little bit of a remark earlier about what JW has done for you, but where do you think you would be if you didn't have the teachings of J.W. Wright? Because when you look at the man, he's truly more than a man. He's not just a book of knowledge, but he's a person of equality. So what would you say your greatest takeaways from your teaching with J.W. Wright would be?
I mean, there's so much I can say about Jay. And he's like one of, you know, Tyler and I's best friends. He's my instructor, like, I owe, like, my jiu-jitsu to him. I think he's taught us so much just on how to, like, in jiu-jitsu, but also just how to handle yourself, like, in life. Like, Jay always treats everybody very fairly, the high road. There's a lot of times I've seen this, like, where people have just burnt him so badly, but he refuses to, like, stoop to that level, and he always, like, does what's the right thing, not what's, like, what would make him feel better, you know? And I know that I've seen that time and time again where that's just really paid off for him in the long run. Like, everybody likes Jay. He's a good guy. He's well-known in the community, and I think he's successful, and his academy is successful. His students are successful because of the way that he, like, handles his business. And just learning and like sitting back and watching like how he treats other people and how he deals with like things in the and just inside of jiu-jitsu and outside, like, has really helped both Tyler and I in like at where we've gotten today. I think, you know, learning from him has like helped us to get to the positions that we are, and especially like Tyler doing a lot of the commentary and things like that now, like, he's very unbiased and he, you know, handles himself well to be where you can have friends from all over the country, like all over the world, really, and it doesn't matter like politics or whatever, you can still get along with these people, and like he always like Travis, like, just to do the right thing.
I love the dude. He pretty much is, between him and Tyler, I mean, they're like two peas in a pod. You couldn't find two better gentlemen in the art of, you know, jiu-jitsu. Would you say that with respect, flow grappling, and all of these other promotions that are popping up, do you feel that they're gonna help or hinder the sport of BJJ? Do you think they're gonna take away the traditional aspect of what you guys find so profound and what initially led you to the mat?
I think it's good for jiu-jitsu, like all these like different formats, all the new like professional like events, and they give like opportunities for practitioners to like really showcase their jiu-jitsu, and you see people like whatever your style is, they start like, I guess, gravitating towards those different promotions, those tournaments, and those things, and I think that's good for jiu-jitsu. I mean, it's growing. I was like. But there's different sects of jiu-jitsu. It's like the no-gi world and like the gi world, like the traditional, like, you know, IBJJF like style of competitors that are point fighters, and everybody's able to like find their niche and like really, you know, like whatever you like about jiu-jitsu, like you can find an avenue to I guess practice that style of jiu-jitsu. And I think it's good. I think it's good for jiu-jitsu. I don't think that it's, I mean, if the sport didn't evolve, I don't think that it would be as popular as it is, that it is today. It's like evolution and change is good. Don't forget where you come from. Don't forget the past. I mean, the fundamentals of jiu-jitsu are always going to be the fundamentals of jiu-jitsu. Like, that's not changing. But the games change. The sport, you know, like, the sport will change, but I think that's good. I think especially, you know, jiu-jitsu, like you said, jiu-jitsu from a spectator standpoint, to me, can be extremely boring. Like, especially when you're watching a 10-minute match, a 20-minute match, and it's, you know, nothing. Like, people are stalling or playing. Like, everybody fights to win. Nobody's going to, like, expose themselves and make it easy for them to, you know, to lose a match. But, to me, I think it's good for jiu-jitsu.
Yes. How would you say, and you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to, Professor, but how would you say that jiu-jitsu has defined you as a person off of the mat?
I think jiu-jitsu has just, like, given me a confidence off the mat as well. I think it's, I don't know. I think, you know, jiu-jitsu is my hobby, it's my passion or whatever, and it's given me a lot. It's helped me, like, grow as a person, because in jiu-jitsu, I'm always learning, you know, you're never, there's always going to be something that's better than you. There's always more techniques to learn. You never, like, are just like, oh, I know it all now. Like, there's just always something that you can learn from. So I think that I take that aspect into my life is like where I'm always trying to like grow as a person and become a better person, the same as I am a better jiu-jitsu practitioner. And I think it's given me that. And Tyler and I talk about this all the time. It's like jiu-jitsu is our hobby, it's our passion, it's what we love. It's like, but it isn't who I am as a person. It doesn't define everything that I am. It's a big part of my life. But it does help me to grow as a person and become a better person, because I'm always analyzing like things that I do, like how could I have done that better, how could I treat these people better, how could I, you know, just be a better person, because I'm constantly doing that in my, like, my jiu-jitsu practice as well.
Yes. You know, one thing that astounded me about BJJ when I first got into it, you know, because back then practitioners don't get paid for this. And you look at these people, they work 9 to 5, and, you know, instead of being like the normal person in life, going home, shutting their garage, closing their blinds, they go put on a gi and get on a mat. You know, what is it about jiu-jitsu that, you know, whether, you know, because there is no pain, what is it about jiu-jitsu that draws so many people? Do you think it's a way for them to express themselves without being caught up in society's ways or being, you know, being judged? What is it about jiu-jitsu that, you know, without the pay, that has practitioners flocking to the mats?
You know, I think a lot of people, it's a hobby, but it's an escape. It's like this, like, stress release. And jiu-jitsu is it creates this community that, family, you know, if you're in a good academy and you're at a good place, like, you get to come, you get to unwind, train jiu-jitsu because it's fun and it's addicting, but you also just get to be, like, with your friends and family. Like, Tyler and I talk about it all the time. It's like, we have friends and stuff outside of jiu-jitsu, but not really anymore. Like, most of our friends are, because in our relationship, close to people, are people in jiu-jitsu, and it's, when you get this deep in it, too, it's almost, like, kind of weird to have friends that aren't in jiu-jitsu because it's such a big part of your life that you talk about it, like, constantly. And if somebody doesn't really, like, know about jiu-jitsu, like, I'm like, I don't really want to have this conversation with you because you just don't get it. But jiu-jitsu is, like, it is a family. It's, like, I think it's the environment. It's like, you go to practice, and no matter what belt you are, no matter who you are, like, what life you lead outside of jiu-jitsu, like, you come and you're accepted and you're part of something that's, like, bigger than yourself, and it creates that, like, environment. I think that's what draws people to it.
Yes. Now, would you say that with the way the art is going, that more predominantly you're seeing a transition from old man jiu-jitsu to new era jiu-jitsu and seeing a more well-defined practitioner on the mat when you go into competitions nowadays?
I think that it's funny if you, like, talk about, like, old man jiu-jitsu versus, like, new jiu-jitsu, because even the new jiu-jitsu is not really, like, it's not really that new. Like, things start developing and growing, like, the games expand. But if you watch old stuff, like, the things that are new in jiu-jitsu now, it's like, well, guys were doing that, like, the old school guys were doing a lot of the same stuff. It's just, like, become more prominent, or it's, like, some of the games have changed because of certain new styles, I guess.
You know, I got one more question, and then we'll kind of wrap things up here for you, Professor. You know, I kind of like to ask this question that of people that I find very profound in life and could leave a statement for others in the future. If you could put down on a piece of paper a statement about who you are and what you took away from the sport, and what would you like to see instilled in the sport for future generations to pick up, look at, and read, what would that statement be, Professor Bishop?
I think treat people the right way, and always and only teach good people to do it too.
Cool. You know, you and your husband have thoroughly changed my life and my thoughts of the art of jiu-jitsu, and JW, when he made the statement when I had him on the show, that, you know, when I asked him what it meant to be, him to be a black belt, and he says, I'm truly not a black belt, I'm a white belt at heart. You know, it truly has left a profound mark in my heart and in my soul, and I will continue to share practitioners with my listeners, as I believe that The art of jiu-jitsu is growing. It deserves a place in the sport. It deserves to be heard from. I'm truly honored that you joined the show today. With that being said, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. If there's any friends or family, any social media sites, or any sponsors you'd like to thank, Professor, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always good talking with you, and it's just fun, and you always make me feel really good about myself after I talk to you. But I would like to thank my teammates at Gracie Mida, all my teammates back in St. Louis, my San Diego, and my professor, obviously J.W. Wright, my husband, Tyler Bishop, Hedges Library, my coach here in San Diego. He's taken my game to the next level in this last year. And my sponsors, Fuji Sports and Lazy Love Jiu-Jitsu and NeoCell.
Now, where can my listeners find you on social media? Because you truly are creating a new wave in this art. And I know that you and your husband have a page where people can follow new videos, new techniques, and things of that nature. Where can the listeners and the fans find you on social media in that aspect?
Well, my Instagram is Jenna Bishop BJJ, Jenna with one N. And you can also find us at bishopbjj.com.
And I suggest you do, because I was on that page, and I tell you what, it's really unique. I'm truly honored, Professor, that you joined my show today. You're changing the sport for the better. You truly are an unspoken hero in my eyes, and I think the sport is a better place with you. And I wish you the best of luck in future competitions, and I look forward to having you back on the show again shortly.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Thank you, and you have a blessed day, Professor. God bless. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor Jenna Bishop, truly a quiet soul in the art of, you know, jiu-jitsu, but very profound, profound words coming from her today. She truly is a blessing in my life, as her husband, Tyler Bishop, is truly a blessing in my life, too. I always look forward to sharing tremendous attributes of each and every genre of the sport, you know, and sometimes people don't understand that, but, you know, the way I look at it is, anybody that doesn't do a 9-to-5, anybody that steps out of the norm deserves a voice, and that voice will be shared on my show. Without any further ado, we're going to jump to the raw deal, Justin Baseman.
Hello?
Justin, Don McGuire, the Fighter's Voice. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, good. How's it going?
I just wrapped up a tremendous interview with Professor Jenna Bishop, and now I got my boy on here. You know, it's kind of been a minute since we had you on here. You know, we've talked over the phone. We haven't had much time on the radio. You know, one thing I like about having you on the show, Justin, is we can kind of break things down. Real, we could talk, you know, forthwith and be honest about everything. This fight that you got coming October 7th truly is probably one of the most pivotal fights that you've had in recent dates as far as your career is concerned. What does October 7th mean to the raw deal?
This fight's big for me. For the simple fact that I put so much on it. I already told all my sponsors, told all my family, all my friends, my next loss, I'm going to retire. I hate to admit it, but I haven't been able to overcome the obstacles that were put in front of me. You know, I fractured my hand. I kept telling myself, yeah, I'm fine. I'm not trying to lie to everybody. I'm just trying to convince myself that I can train, I can get in there and perform the way I want to. But really, I wasn't able to train the way I wanted to because of my hand, and I wasn't able to perform the way I wanted to with my hand. I was worried about my hand during training. I was worried about my hand during the fight. But I finally realized, you know what? I'm just going to break my hand in his jaw. You know what I mean? Like, forget it. I don't need my hand. I got my left hand, and I got my 2 feet. I'll make it happen, dude. What's the worst that could happen? I got to suffer for a while? Who cares? I'm ready to break my hand in these dudes' faces. I'm tired of making excuses. I don't want to retire, even though I'm going to stick to my word. My next loss, I'm going to retire. But I want to go on a win streak. I want to get back to doing my thing. So I'm going to come out this next fight, and I'm going to force it. I'm just going to force the win. I'm going to force the highlight reel fights that I usually have. I'm going to force the comeback. So I'm really excited about this fight. I'm pumped up, man.
I know, you know, with our talks on the phone and things of this nature, you know, I see a rebirth in you, bro. You know, a lot of times, you know, people say, well, if I don't win, this is going to be my last fight. I truly don't think that that's the case with you, because I think, you know, as you know, the sport decides when to let you go. You don't decide when to let go of the sport. But
that's true, man. But with that being said, you know, I want people begging me to stay rather than begging me to go. And it's hard, man. Believe me, it's hard. Because I got people that take me to the side like, hey, man, don't retire if you lose again. I got people sending me messages on Facebook. I mean, like some deep messages, like telling me their story and telling me how my story helped them and how I shouldn't retire when I lose. But and I don't want to, believe me. Like, I even thought about it, like, maybe I shouldn't. But no, I didn't already put it out there to take it back. You know, I put it out there and I'm sticking to it. But I really believe in myself that I can go on a win streak. I know that I have what it takes, but like I said, I haven't been able to overcome my injuries, and I don't know how to sit the bench. Huh? I don't know how to sit down. Man. I got too much shit going on. If I'm hurt and I can't fight, I'm going to convince myself that I'm not that hurt and I can't fight. I don't know. Maybe that's a flaw, but I'm happy that I got to go out there and step in the cage. I'm happy I got to do what I do, what I love, you know, and it sucks losing, man. It sucks. And it tarnishes all my accomplishments in my heart. Maybe that's not the case, but it's hard for me to walk around taking all these goddamn L's, dude. I need to get back on track or get out. And I know that's kind of rough, but that's just how it is with me. You know, I've been fighting for 12 years now, and I might take a loss here and there, but it's mostly win, win, win. So it's kind of hard. I still keep my head held high, and I know who I am. And fighting doesn't make me or break me, but at the same time, I don't want to stay in it if I can't perform the way I know I can and that I want to, you know?
So would it be a fair assumption to say that come October 7th that Hedrick truly has a war ahead of him, because not only are you trying to regather yourself as a four-time world champion, but you also have a point to prove to Justin Baseman. So would you say going to the end of this fight, Hedrick truly needs to be on his best performance, on his toes, and realize that a true champion is coming?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't blame him if he's sleeping on me. You know what I mean? I'm on a losing streak, so I don't mind if he's sleeping on me. He could bring his A game or he could bring his F game. I don't care. I already know what I'm going to do. I see myself doing these things. You know, I'm going to go for the tricky shots. So if he's listening or his friends are listening, please send him the message. I'm bringing everything out. I'm going for the flying ninja kicks, flying ninja knees, spinning back fists, flying elbows. I'm doing everything to win this fight. And I'm doing everything to win every fight on my way out. I'm, like I said in one of my posts before, I'm trying for a 10-fight win streak. Probably not likely, but I'm going for it. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to tell me any different. I'm going to win from here on out. Nobody's going to tell me any different. And, you know, I believe in myself. I believe in my skills. And it's been hard. It's been hard. But I realize that I'm harder. You know what I mean? So bring the shit. I'm ready October. So Aaron better bring it, because I'm bringing it, man. I'm fighting for my career. You know what I mean? I'm fighting for everything I've been fighting for. It's crazy. But I had to put that pressure on myself. I had to force the issue. I had to force the comeback. So next week, I'm going to force the issue, man.
And I truly believe you are. You know, you've got one of the most tremendous fan bases, you know, of any fighter I've ever seen, you know. And one thing that I find truly instrumental is a gentleman by the name of Sean Sharkey. When you sit down and you have those one-on-ones with Sean Sharkey, what transpires in those, and what kind of thoughts does Justin Baseman walk away getting that type of knowledge with somebody that truly believes in you?
Oh, man, not only does he believe in me, man, but he's got mad love for me, you know, and I could feel it when he's talking to me. I could hear it in his voice, you know. He's one of my best coaches by far, man, and we're really close. So when he's telling me stuff, I could tell that it's been a lot of thought involved, and he's been waiting to see me and let me know, because I don't get to go to Fight Corps very often, but I have to go before a fight because it gives me this feeling, and I get to talk to my people, I get to see all my family down there, and it fires me up, and it does something for me inside. But when I get to go to the gym and work with him and show me stuff, like, it never leaves my head. You know, when I'm running or when I'm training, I hear all my coaches, I hear all my training partners, I hear everybody. I hear the love, I hear the hate, and I use it as fuel, you know what I mean? And this fight is nice because mentally I'm in a different place. Because before, like, when I fought James Terry in Bellator, that was a big fight for me. I needed that win. We both did. If we would have got a good win, we would have signed back on a multi-fight. So we both had a lot of pressure. And I remember thinking, my hand, you know. And I couldn't pop up like I like to. I couldn't throw hard like I like to. And I was worried, you know. I'm worried about my hand. That's almost like my bread and butter. But now I'm like, you know what? I'm going to break my hand. I know how to punch, right? It's not going to be a boxer punch. It's just going to be me laying into him with everything I have with a fractured hand. And it's going to break, I'm sure. Or it's going to get worse. But I don't care anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still going to be able to work. I'm still going to be able to pick up my kids. I'm still going to be able to write. It's just going to hurt sometimes. Oh, well. All right, I'm done babying my hand. I'm done babying everything. I'm going in hard. I'm going in to crush this dude in the first round. I want to finish him in the first. I want it to be devastating so I can come back and fight for the belt. I just fought for the belt for King of the Cage, and I lost 30 pounds in like 4 weeks, 3 weeks. It was ridiculous. I was so fatigued. That wasn't me. It hasn't been me for a while. So I'm like dying to get out. I'm dying to burst out and just explode on the scene and just take what's mine, man. Like, I don't know what Aaron's been through, but all I know is this fight game is mine. And next weekend, it's going to still be mine. Because I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to walk out with a W. No disrespect to Aaron. I hope he does good. I hope he doesn't get hurt. I hope he still continues to fight and have a good life. Nothing personal. But I have to stop this man in the first round to make a point, make a statement, and come back hard. And if I don't finish him in the first, it's going to be the second. I'm going for the kill. Forget it, dude. I'm breaking my hand. I'm breaking everything trying to finish this dude. I don't care. I just don't care anymore.
You know, and
I needed that.
I
needed
know
that, man.
Yeah, so it's justified in you saying so. You know, I'm going to kind of ask you a hard question because I've been around in your life for just a little bit. You know, a lot of people in the sport say that, you know, you can't confine yourself to, you know, one aspect of a gym or just a couple of gyms, that you need a complexity of gyms to get you where you need to be. But from my perspective in watching your career, when Justin Baseman was training at several different places, you know, I think it, in my opinion, it caused more harm than good. Now that you've kind of limited yourself to where you train at, where you go and get your knowledge at, do you feel that that's allowed Justin Baseman not only physically but mentally to get on the right path?
You know, I think it did help a little bit, but the turning point in that was, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on when I'm jumping all these gyms, and there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that people don't know about. But, you know, it's like one day it finally clicked. Like, you know what? I got to be selfish. I got to go to the places that only want to get me ready. Like when I was getting ready at Combat Fitness, I come, they shut it down. It was all about me. I go to Fight Corps, they shut it down. It's all about me. You know, I go to these other gyms, and it's all about me. It wasn't always like that. Because I like to go to these gyms and train and help people and give back and like, oh, man, I want to – can you show me some stuff? I seen you on TV in Bellator. Can you show me – like, yeah, I want to go out and show people. I want to help people. I want to build people up. But I had to learn how to be selfish. So I go to these gyms where people are only focusing on me the whole time. And that's what I needed. And I'm blessed for that. And it's a good feeling because we do that for other guys too. They got to fight. We make a camp for them, and we focus on them. And that's how it should be. So I had to kind of fine-tune everything. And that helped a lot. But I'm telling you, man, this last year, I had to go through it. I had to learn the hard way because I've been fighting for so long and fighting hurt that if somebody says, hey, Justin, you're hurt, you know, you shouldn't fight. They're not going to say that. They're going to say, hey, Justin, I seen you fight before hurt. I'm sure you'll do fine. So nobody's going to tell me, hey, Justin, sit down, sit the bench, you know, wait a while. It'd be a hard argument anyway. You know, I work two jobs, I got a family to take care of, and I fight. So I'm juggling all this to keep my world at peace, and it's a big piece of my puzzle. But once again, it doesn't make me or break me. When I'm done fighting, I'm done fighting, and I'm going to be fine. I'm not no Michael Jordan. I'm not going to come back. None of that stuff. But what I'm saying is, like, I learned how to be sensitive. I learned how to be selfish on everything and focused on my stuff. And, yeah, I give back and I help people. But when it's my time, it's my time. And if you're not all about that, then I'll go somewhere else where everybody else is, you know. So it's not nothing bad to say about all the other gyms that I used to go to, or it's bad to gym jump, because I know a lot of people that gym jump and they're successful. But like you said, there is stuff that comes with jumping to all these different gyms. You got to deal with these different people. You got to deal with behind the scenes stuff. You got to deal with, you know, and plus the small MMA world. So it's like, hey, you're fighting my friend. Hey, you're fighting my teammate. You know, oh, please don't go over there and tell these people these secrets and stuff like that. It's like, look, I'm here to train. High school's over, bro. It's over 99. So I don't do that shit. But, yeah, I did narrow everything down, and I feel good, and I'm happy with everybody that's in my corner. I'm so blessed.
Yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, I think you learned the way Diego Lima learned. You know, I was there for just about every part of Diego Lima's career, and, you know, he was doing tremendous, and I came that he got offered a fight, his coach, everybody, stood behind him. Said, Diego, don't take this, you know, you're not up to par, don't take this fight. And he's kind of like you. He's going to do what he wants to do irregardless, because that's just the nature of some people. You know, and Diego Lima takes his fight. He ends up injuring himself. Well, you know, I realize this, but, you know, I let some time go because I want to give each and every fighter their own time in life to sit back and reflect, be with family, and just find themselves again. And I hit him up one day and asked him to come on the show, and he said, what the fuck for? And I said, well, what do you mean, bro? He says, well, I haven't fought in a year, year and a half. Nobody's hit me up. Nobody's asking me. Matter of fact, you're the only one that's even wanting me to come on the show. And I said, bro, just come on the show. And so he came on the show, and, you know, within a 6 months' time, he was the welterweight champion in Titan FC. And what I see in you two that is so unique, and what I appreciate the most, is you both do it for family. You both do it from your heart. And sometimes you could be a little stubborn, but at the same time, you're doing it for the right reasons. And the reason I bring the synopsis of Diego Lima in it is because I think that's where you're at right now, in the point in your life, Justin, that, you know, the time is now. You know, if you talk to Diego Lima, he'll tell you, you know, I told him, you know, it's coming, baby, the time's coming. And I feel the same way with you. I see it in your post. I hear it in your voice. You're a different Justin Baseman. So when you sat back and you looked at everything that's transpired over the lessons learned and this and that, what is it that truly relit the fire in the heart of Justin Baseman?
Well, what it was is, like, I just realized that, you know what, I can't make excuses anymore. I can't settle for less. I know that I'm destined to do big things, and I've done big things in my career, but I could see myself doing things. And throughout my whole career, when I see myself doing things, I get out there and actually do them. So I know this is going to come into play. Don't get me wrong. Anything can happen. I can lose a fight, and then I'm done. But I see myself doing so much more still. And I know I have so much more to do. And like you said, it's good. I'm giving to my family. I'm giving to my friends. I'm giving to people that help me. I'm giving back to the gyms, the coaches, everybody that's ever helped me. I want to be able to give back. And I have, but I see myself doing more. And at one point when I was in Bellator and I was moving up the ranks and I was, like, really on fire, I told myself, I said, okay, I win this next fight and I'm set up to fight the champion. If I become the champion or I'm in the title pool, that's when I'm going to start making these moves. Because throughout my career, I try to lead by example. I try to motivate people. I try to inspire people. I try to be positive all the time and show people that, you know what, you just never give up. Look at me. I come from the gutter. And I look at my life now, you know. So I want to give back. I see myself giving back. And that's what's really important to me, you know. So I guess what sparked that change is, like, I know that I have to do this no matter what. Cut me in half. I got to get the sewing kit out, get myself right, and get back on the mission. Nothing's going to stop me, not even myself. You know, and that's what I had to realize, is that it's more than me. It's bigger than me. It's bigger than my family. It's bigger than everybody around me on the world. And not everybody realizes that, but at least 100 million people see me fight, at least. I know there's 7 billion people in the world, but that's a lot of people. And I've had a lot of people contact me saying, you did this for me, you inspired me. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have done this. And that is great feeling, you know what I mean? And my daughters feel the same thing, and it's great. I love impacting people, so I want to stay on fire. I want to stay lighting that fire for people. You know, I want to be the flame. So I'm just ready to blow up, dude. I'm ready to blow up.
You know, the other day I had a fighter on my show by the name of Shab Smith. I'm sure you know who he is. And, you know, I'd always wanted to interview this guy. And a lot of people said, you know, why? Why do you want to interview this guy? And it's funny because when Shad came on, you know, he said, you know what, dude, I probably got the worst fucking record in MMA. He says, but if you ask me, I don't care. He says, because I do this because I love it. I do it, it's because it's who I am, you know. So when you look at it in that retrospect, you know, I see a lot of, you know, words that he expressed on my show that come from you. You know, life is truly about what we make of it. And what you've done in this sport is nothing short of beautiful. And who you are for your children is tremendous. You know, the thought that Justin Baseman says, if I don't win this fight, I'm going to retire. To be quite honest with you, it blew my mind away when I seen that post, because I know you on the real. So it's like, I don't see it perplexing in that way. You know, I see a Justin Baseman that has truly found himself. I see a Justin Baseman that has looked in the mirror and realized it's your time and what you need to do. When you had that reflection, Justin, about making that post about if I don't win, I'm going to retire, when tons of shit must have went through your head, but what truly has defined you in making your future successful? You know, we all say that, you've heard me say this too, I'm going to walk away from radio, and you told me, bro, you can't, there's so many people that depend on you. I mean, so what was it in that thought process of yours that made you come up to that decision that this is that make or break moment?
Well, you know, it's hard taking losses when I feel like I could have beat the guy. It's hard taking losses when I just beat myself. You know, I go in there and I just beat myself, because if I know that I'm hurt and I know I didn't train right and I go in there, then I'm beating myself. It's so stupid of me to do that, but I try to convince myself that my training was good enough. I try to convince myself that my hand's okay. And you can't find a single fighter out there that's going to tell you he's not ready for a fight 3 weeks away from the fight. He's going to tell you that he's in the best shape of his life. All the fighters are going to tell you that. But they have to. It's programmed in us. Yeah, I feel great. I feel like $1 million. I'm sure we do every day, but not ready for a fight. If you're not ready for a fight and you're sitting there saying, yeah, I'm ready, that's just wrong. And I've been there and I've done that, and I'm not going to do that anymore. And I'm not going to settle for less. I'm going to go back to my winning ways. I'm going to force it. And if I can't force it, then I'm going to go ahead and get out. But I had to make that decision, because it's like this. I don't like to lose. Okay. I'm not a sore loser, but I don't like to lose, especially when I've been winning. You know what I mean? I've been winning, winning, winning. And then if I did have a little loss, I come back hard and I get right back on track. Now I'm taking loss after loss after loss. You know what I mean? And it's like, and it doesn't faze me like that. Like, it doesn't faze me like some people think. Like, I remember my first loss, I couldn't even watch the whole video. I was eating ice cream and shit. I couldn't even watch the whole video. Finally, I was able to watch the whole video. And it took me about 3-4 more losses to really learn how to lose. You know, not everybody knows how to lose. I remember my fight in San Diego, big old fight with Raymond Daniels, one of the best kickboxers in the world. And he got me with his famous spinning back kick that he's got on many people. And I went out that night and I had a blast. I felt like I've never lost in my life, because I got people in my corner that love me and know me and know what I'm about. They're like, oh, damn, that didn't go your way, but you could have done this and you could have done that. You know, like, I know you're capable of doing this. And I know that. So the losses aren't hard on me. If somebody's like, yeah, Justin, you know, you got to work on this, maybe come to this gym, I don't take offense to that. That's constructive criticism, dude. That's your opinion. You know what I mean? You got my back, in a sense, you know? So thank you. You know, you got And but I'm taking losses, and people feel comfortable. Oh, you got to win, man. You know, and some people might say something negative, not too negative, because motherfuckers know I'm from the street. But they'll say some shit, and you know what I mean. And it doesn't affect me. It doesn't hurt my heart. You know what I mean? I go on the YouTube channel, and I'll see some shit, and I'll see one of the fights I lost, and then the comments it says bum. It doesn't bother me. Nothing does, because I know what I'm about. You know what I'm saying? My integrity keeps me strong. So I'm training, I'm fighting, I'm working a full-time job for the government. I'm working a part-time job for 33 apartments I tend to by myself. I got my two kids that I'm really close with, and I got my family, I got my kids' mom, I got everybody around me that really depend on me and know me. And that brings so much joy that people depend on me and people trust me and people love me. Like, that's the shit. This fighting shit is nothing. You know what I mean? This fighting shit is me giving back. My grandpa was a boxer, so it's in my blood. I love to compete. I love to fight. I love it, and I love giving back. I love motivating people. There's so much to fighting, so much. And I know that nobody's going to really want to see me go, you know what I mean? And I don't even want to go. But I'm not going to stay in a young man's game when I'm getting older and my injuries are slowing me down and I can't perform the way I want. I promised myself that I would get out when I can't perform the way I know I can and the way I'm supposed to. I've been dying to perform the way everybody wants me to, because that's what it's supposed to be. That's who I am. So I gotta feed everybody. They're waiting to eat. They're like, where's the deal at? Let me see these fights. Let me see your skills. I want to eat. I'm ready to feed everybody now. You know what I mean? So like I said, if I have to break my hand, if I have to break my leg, I don't care. You're going to have to kill me. I'm going to go get that win. And I'm going to get on a win streak. I'm going to start training really, really hard. And I'm going to come in there nasty.
You know, one thing, and I hope you don't take this to heart, and, you know, I think I've known you long enough to give you my opinion. And in all honesty, watching your career, I honestly don't think your opponents beat you these last three fights. I honestly think you beat yourself, homie. You know, I don't know how you take that, and I don't know how you'll respond to it. But being that we're friends and family, you know, I think you put yourself and the expectation of yourself, you know, too high up there. And I don't think the opponents beat you. I think you beat yourself. What do you think about that assumption, or do you think I'm wrong in every essence of the matter?
No, you're right. You're right. Like I was saying, for example, you would hate to go into a fight against somebody that you know you can beat. The fight's going, you're beating them. Your second round comes, you're beating them, and then you gas, and you run out of gas, and now he beats you. So you beat yourself there because you ran out of gas. You had him, but you didn't train properly. You didn't come ready like you were supposed to. So you beat yourself. And I was doing that. Some of these guys that beat me, if I come in ready, raw deal, 100%, most likely I'm going to beat them. You know? But I'm not going to sit there and be like, yeah, I'm better than that guy. No, I am, so I feel better about it. No. That man was the better man that night because that man came prepared and I didn't. Doesn't matter who's the better fighter. It's who came prepared that night and who was the better man that night. So what I'm doing is preparing for that night this Saturday. And I don't care about the past, dude. I don't care about any of my fights. I don't want revenge on. I don't want a rematch. None of that stuff. It doesn't bug me. It's like, you know what? It is what it is. I might fight a dude 10 times and beat him 9 times. I might fight a dude 10 times and not beat him once. Doesn't make me less of a fighter. Doesn't make me less of a man. Doesn't hurt my heart at all. Now, I know that I made mistakes in my career. Everybody makes mistakes. But now I'm making the same mistake over and over. So it's time for me to either stop and get back on track or admit that I can't and get out. So you're right. You know, I probably could have beat these guys, and I probably just beat myself. But I'm done doing that. I want to come in there and get back to my ways, and I feel good about it. And after this fight, I'm going to start a YouTube channel. For the listeners on there, please check out my YouTube channel. Assuming I win, of course, but start this YouTube channel. I'm going to do different training drills, and if it gets popular, I'm going to start doing everyday workout circuit to kind of get people back on track and in good shape. But so, I got some things coming in the future, and I feel like no matter what, I'm going to win this fight next weekend, no matter how, on the ground, standing up. But I want it to be devastating. I want it to be the only fight that everybody remembers. I want the main event to look like the prelims. I want to own the show. I want to own the fight. I want to own my fight career again. So I'm going in for that.
Most definitely. You know, and I thank King of the Cage for giving you this opportunity. I think a lot of people truly see the raw deal in Justin Baseman. They truly see what you truly are about. You know, my brother, if there was a statement, you know, we've already touched on so many aspects of where you were at, where you're going, and this and that. But if there was a statement you could make to your fans, to my listeners, about what they can expect October 7th, what would that statement be?
I expect a highlight reel fight. Expect the raw deal. Expect fireworks. Expect to see the stuff that you've been dying to see.
Expect the rebirth, the beginning.
Yeah, I'm coming back, man. There ain't no stopping me, you know. Like, nobody can stop me but me. And I almost stopped myself, but like I said, I don't care anymore. If I have to break my hand, I'm going to break my hand. I'll do whatever it takes to get the W. And I could see it. I could see so many things in the future that I know I'm going to do and I'm meant to do. And I'm going to be happy to do.
Most definitely. You know, Justin, it was a tremendous honor having my brother back on the show today. I'm going to hand the mic over to you, my brother. If there's any friends, family, social media, sponsors, anything you would just like to add to the program, the floor is yours, homie.
All right, I appreciate that. Let's see here.
He said, I got to break my list out, bro.
Yeah, for real. Sorry.
You're good, bro. That's what it's all about. I'd rather have real.
Okay, let me see. I got it. Sorry, one second. Mm-mm. Okay, here we go. Oh, wow. Wait, here we are. Sorry about that. Okay, MMA Gold, TGB Supplements, Beam Planet, Anytime Fitness, Body Mouth Guards, Out Cold, Bloodline, Pound for Pound, Swift, Lana's, Fight Core. And I want to thank Renee Pryor. She's one of my sponsors that have been helping me so much lately. So if you're listening to this, I appreciate you. You're an angel. And thank you for having me on, always having me on. You know, like, you're one of the realest, man. I appreciate you, you know. We became pretty close last couple years, and I'm thankful for your friendship, man. And I wish you the best. I wish your future endeavors to be good, and I know you got some stuff going on, and I hope everything works out great. And to all you listeners out there, please tell your friends and your family and get everybody to check out the show at least once.
Yeah, you know, that's all I ask of anybody. You know, the funny thing, and before I let you go, man, it was kind of funny the other day. I'll let you and a lot of people that are listening now in on my little video that I ended up doing about MMA Junkie. You know, the show is growing vastly, and yes, I did sign with a corporation that will have me on iHeartRadio and Univision and several other mass conglomerates. But I get this phone call from an executive from MMA Junkie, wanting to know why I don't accept phone calls on my show. And I said, you know, for the simple fact that I've been hacked. I had Joe Daddy Stevenson, you know, embarrassed on my show to the point that I decided that I wasn't going to take any more phone calls. He said, well, our listeners really love your show, and they would really like to be able to call in. And so I sat back, and, well, first and foremost, I hung up on this gentleman like four or five times. And, you know, when I finally did listen to him, I'm like, why is MMA Junkie going to call me and wonder why I don't take calls on my show, being that they're one of the top three shows in the country? And it just made me realize that real is where it's at. If you can't do a show without theatrics and all the other bull,
yeah, yeah, You're right.
So you know, I did something that I never would have done. I went back and I retaliated, and some people said it was like David versus Goliath, the small man versus the giant. And the reason I did that is because I shouldn't have to explain my show to anybody. If you listen to my show, you understand that I'm showing the fighters in a different aspect. I'm giving each and every one of you an opportunity to share who you are in and outside of the cage. And I think that's what makes my show uniquely different, and I think that's why my show is growing profoundly. But the thing that I admire the most about this show is fighters like you that come on and open your life, your hearts, and your home to my listeners. And with that being said, that's the reason I do the show, is to give the fighters a voice and give you guys an equal opportunity to share who you are in life outside of the cage, without the theatrics, without the drama, without the hype. You know, you can get a Wikipedia Tapology show out there on 100,000 shows, and you don't gain nothing from that. Shows like this, you truly get to hear the heart, the thoughts, and the mind of Justin Robdale Baseman. You know, my brother, I wish you the best come October 7th. I'm calling it the rebirth of the Raw Deal, and that's how I truly feel. Brother, I know you're going to come out Justin Baseman of old. I wish you the best of luck. I love you, my brother, and I can't wait for October 7th, and I can't wait to have you back on the show afterwards, because I know no matter what, you will shine this night in my heart.
Oh, yeah, it's my time, baby. Much love, man. Thank you, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. God bless you, my brother. Peace out.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Justin Raw Deal Baseman, set to fight Reddick October 7th, King of the Cage. If you don't have your tickets, I suggest you get them now. You know, I've been losing a couple followers lately, and, you know, I would be lying if I would say it doesn't perplex in my heart. You know, there was three gyms in this country that I predominantly spoke of, and that's Team Body Shop MMA, Glory MMA and Fitness, and MMA Gold. You know, I'm going to have to renege on the aspect of MMA Gold, and I'll tell you why. You know, I'm a person that believes in being for the fighter, not about riding coattails, not about gaining notoriety off of your fighters, not about, you know, utilizing some connections and other people for the betterment of yourself. This sport is about the betterment of the fighter, about the sport, for the fans, created by the inner workings. You know, this sport is a very integral puzzle when you think about it. And if you take one piece out of that puzzle, it doesn't work right. So when you get a gym that portrays themselves as one thing but comes across as another, you know, they even had me believing that they were truly in that 1% that truly deserved the credit. And it's sad, but it's true. I denounced myself from MMA Gold. I believe in, you know, and I believe in and I back the Misfits of Gold 100%. You know, some people, of course, are going to unfollow me like they already have because I have said that. But you know what? I'm going to speak from my heart. I'm a real person, and I stand by what I believe in. And if you choose not to be on my page or follow the show, that's totally up to you. But I will continue to bring you each and every week tremendous shows. Next week, we got Liam McGeary. We got Kira Batira. We got Brittany Big Bird Elkin. Chris Dotson. Just goes on and on and on for next week. Cody Bollinger. We got tremendous shows. Why would the fighters want to come on a show that doesn't truly represent them, the sport, or the fan? On that note, I want to thank Finished MMA, Juan Martinez. I want to thank the 86ers.net, Alfred and Freddie. Without you, I wouldn't exist. You know, the United Way Merced, you know, that speaks profound things about my show when you've got you know, people like the United Way Merced and the 86ers, you know, behind you. It's just, it humbles me even to this day, knowing that I've got each and every one of their support moving forward. One team, one dream is the way it's supposed to be. On that note, have a tremendous night of watching football. You've been listening to The Fighter's Voice. I'm Don McGuire. God bless. I'm going to take you out with a little bit of Ice Cube.
Like me on the black and white ivory, getting six on a teetly. You don't want to see a G break your ass like dishes, buster ass tricks, sleep with the fishes, running from Lennox up at Venice. They want to have me a strike like Dennis the Menace, but that ain't